Here's Wilson, and on the right circle, he scores!
Hello and welcome once again to the Howling Point Podcast.
Ovechkin with a buzzer beater! It counts!
The Caps fan, Washington Capitals fans, live take from Maryland on this Sunday, February 23rd.
Oh, spectacular!
And with me, as always, also to speak to you about the week that was in Caps hockey, is the one and only Mermaid, live herself from Centerville, Virginia, Anna Knox.
Yes. Hello. How are things? Well, last time we spoke, it was almost your birthday. So now your birthday is, you know, now you're...
Come and gone.
Yes. Was it good?
It was rather nice, yeah. I had a few things to take care of, but other than that... It was is really good. Mrs. Blue Liner made me a great dinner.
Fabulous.
And I had actually had a nice little lunch with some folks from work as well before that during the day. So yeah, it was really, really nice, pleasant day.
Good. Good. And that's all that matters.
And then for the rest of the week we watched Capitals games, and it wasn't so pleasant.
No, it was difficult. I have to admit, it was kind of tail between the legs. Damn it. You know, like, this seriously sucks, and what's going on? And I know everyone's got an opinion, so we'll get into that soon.
There was a lot of damn it. Damn it, Orlov. Damn it, Carlson. Damn it, anyone that was supposed to be playing defense.
Right.
But counter that with what happened today, earlier today.
Woohoo!
And of course, got the great win. So tempering that, I'm trying to be. I shouldn't just try. I should be just optimistic. But it was just such a beatdown of heartbreaking losses all week. But I think today's game has given everybody a lot of hope. So
yeah. Well, it lifted that dark cloud back in 2018, which is exactly what we needed. You know, the team kind of haunts us a little bit. So not to get ahead of ourselves, but yes, today I watched it. I was not giving up. Was I frustrated? Of course. Anytime Malkin scores, I just want to throw up in my mouth. But yeah, so we can get to that in a little bit. I know you wanted to go over a couple of the games, starting with the Golden Showers.
Well, we're actually going to try a little bit. Well, since it was four games and we have a guest on coming on a little bit here later, I want to try something a little bit different with the recaps, kind of get through that a little bit quicker than normal, because I don't think going through the scoring summary really does all of the games justice. Now the first game, like you said, was against Vegas, in Vegas. Mm-hmm. And since it was a loss, we were kind of hoping that what happened in Vegas stayed in Vegas, but it did not.
Right.
It's a 3-2 loss. Oshie was the only bright spot, getting both goals in that game. Vegas had 29 shots on goal. And it was Holpe in net, I believe.
Yep.
Yes. So he stopped 26 of them. I don't think he looked too badly. It was a roaring start for both teams, 15 to 12 shots first period, and then it kind of tailed off.
But I will say I was surprised with the amount of penalty minutes. I mean, it was really, really low. And I think it's finally, yeah, because that whole, like, Ryan Reeves sort of taunting Tom Wilson, and Wilson being like, listen, you're a douche. I'm not, you know, we're done. I'm concentrating on the game, not dropping the gloves with you. Because that seems to be Reeves' only talent, to be honest, is, you know, getting into fights. So, you know, it was kind of like, hey, good, you know, go out there and play. And unfortunately, it just wasn't in our favor and whatever. It was a kind of a shitty week. So yeah, it was frustrating, especially with that team.
Yeah, well, Reeves himself didn't end up getting much more than, say, about 8 or 9, I think is the total. So that wasn't going to happen anyway.
Right.
So moving on to the next game, which was 2 days later back home, Montreal. This was the game, if any, I was kind of hoping they'd kind of turn it around. And it looked like they did for a while. Ovechkin finally got his 699th, broke his scoring drought. Tom Wilson got back on the board as well. He ended up getting what would be the game tire. So mm-hmm. It would send it to overtime. And then, yeah, 58 seconds in, it's over. So it probably reminds a lot of some out there listening of what might have happened in the backseat of a car during prom night. I don't know. Sorry for going there, but I couldn't think of anything else that would be an adequate comparison. I don't know.
Maybe is this a personal experience or just?
No. Asking. No. But yeah, so as another disappointing loss in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
But as Mrs. Blue Liner so astutely put it, at least we got the loser point out of it.
True.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was that. Then came the game that everybody thought they should have won against one of the worst teams in the league over at The Rock. And it felt like they were imprisoned against the Devils.
Now, I know you were working, so
I was working both these games, but Saturdays were, you know, busy as
fuck.
F-dash-dash-dash. No. So I really didn't get to see a whole lot of this game, and I was really PO'd when a certain moment happened, and I didn't get to see that.
Yeah, that was pretty incredible.
And that was, of course, Ovechkin's 700th goal, finally,
which... you know, was fantastic. Like I said, I saw that, and then my son and I went out to that to go have a mom son lunch date because he's in the sixth grade, and I'm sure it's already embarrassing enough to have to go out with your mom. But he was awesome, so I felt good about like, okay, I got the 700, and is it going to rally the team? And what could possibly go wrong while we're at this restaurant and I'm watching it on my phone? And yeah, this was the most frustrating game. I mean, I went in, you know, just being pissed with Vegas and being like, oh, I hate these guys. So I truly hate them. And then, you know, Montreal was like, yeah, it should be, you know, shooing. Like, no, we should be good. Like, this should get them going. And you know, same thing. And I've always said, like, no team is ever 100% beatable and whatever. But this sucked. Last night, they looked like they were just, I mean, it's like it's a, what, like a 1 o'clock game. They all look tired. They all look like they're not interested in it. And how much did it suck that we lost with that 700th goal from Ovechkin and John Carlson breaking records? I mean, come on. Like, you know, he at that game, he tied the Callie Johansson, Johansson. How do you say his last name?
Johansson.
Yeah. I was like, I don't want to screw that one up. You know, it was like all this momentum was there. And then again, you know, too little, too late. Wasn't in the cards.
Well, okay. So if you think about it, and look, I was pretty wanting to throw things, wanting to kick animate stuff. And inanimate objects
mm-hmm.
after that loss. But then, you know, like the man who wore a suit made out of mirrors, I had time to sit down and reflect. And so when I thought about things, I really, the Caps were in it until that short burst of 2 minutes near the end where Kempney made that dumb penalty.
Yeah.
And they got themselves in trouble. And I think it was also Kuznetsov who committed
in the box. Yep.
Kind of a dumb penalty too. And they ultimately they were in it until they lost control for all of about 2.5 minutes towards right. the end, and then done. So had they maintained control for that 2.5 minutes, most likely they would have gotten away with the win.
True. And I know there's a lot of listeners out there that want to put that on Kempney and say that he cost the game and he did this. I am a huge Michael Kempney fan. We all know that. What he did was so very much unlike him. Like, this was like, you know, come on, like, we're not talking about what a hothead and a dirty player Michael Kempney is. Like, those things have never come out of our podcast. You know, and he got heated. I mean, I think that's you know, listening to Joe B, and it's like, you know, listen, enough. He just got enough was enough for him, and that was it. Like, you know, just basically lost his shit. And I'm not saying that it was good, because obviously the result was we lost the game. But for people to just, you know, I saw on Twitter today, it was like, oh, he's good for nothing, rah rah rah. I'm like, and there we go again. You know, he's not one that we've been talking about that needs to be traded, and one that, why do we have him? And, you know, he's completely useless. No, this was his buttons were pushed. He was done. And that's what the outcome was. Do I agree with it? Of course not. Do I wish he had more restraint? Of course I do. But you know what? He turned around in this Pittsburgh game and, in my opinion, kicked ass and totally redeemed himself. But I don't think he really needed to, because we haven't had this issue with Kempney last season, you know, 2018, this season. So whatever. So people who are being assholes about Kempney, I'm like, shutting you down. He got heated. Whatever. It happens.
Right. So, and this is kind of going to spill over into something we're going to talk about, you know, towards the end of the episode, but still, he's a player that ought to know better, and at the moment didn't. And that's kind of...
But don't even say it's still. The coach.
What?
No.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying...
But you will.
He's a player that should have known better in that heat of the moment, and didn't.
Right, so. But... You know, you've got other, I mean, shit, Ovechkin was in the sin bin today. It's like, if we're going to talk about players that are fantastic and he's got 700 goals and, you know, 15, you know, years with the Caps and how amazing he is, and he's captain, he still was in the sin bin. So Michael Kempney lost his shit. So what? It shouldn't come down to the last 2 minutes of a 60-minute game for the Capitals to lose it because of one stupid penalty.
Well,
they should have been in the game for the whole 58 minutes prior to that.
I get all that, and we're kind of getting off topic, but yeah, okay. that's a little that's for later on. But I mean, some good points, some bad there, fortunately or unfortunately. Okay, so then came today's game, which was at noon today, I will just say this. They looked a lot better. They have not looked this good at both ends of the ice for a long time, for the longest time.
Agreed.
And yes, there was that one filthy goal by a certain make you want to throw up in your mouth player, got a nice helping of several knuckle sandwiches today, courtesy of our newest acquisition, Brendan Dillon.
Dilly.
And, but that notwithstanding, I thought overall from top to bottom, it was a mostly good game. There was that 45 second lapse in the second period, but they came out swinging. It was a pretty good game. Oshie with the clutch goal, the game winner, and of course Haglin, who had one earlier in the game and put it away at the end, courtesy of Backstrom. Very, very good game. All around. And like I said, hopefully that is the one that lifts the weight off of everybody, turns everything around, and turns out to be the turning point in the season. So we're about to turn it over to our advertised guest, who will give his expert take on things. And but before we do, I just want to run through some quick key stats for the week, mainly the special teams. Caps were 2-for-11 overall in the four games on the power play. Not horrible, not blow your doors off numbers, not put me in bed numbers, but not horrible either. 7-for-9 on the PK, about the same clip as how they've been going for the year. And I would make a case for number one star being TJ Oshie. He gets three goals, and one of them being the lone game-winning goal. You can make a case for Tommy as well. He got the game-tying goal in the Montreal game.
But it was also another crucial goal.
What were you going to say?
No, I'm sorry. I jumped ahead because I was thinking of today's game where he got his 20th goal. But
right,
that's okay.
So he got it. Like I was saying, he got a crucial goal in today's game as well. His 20th. He's on his way to eclipsing his career best. So you could make a case for him as well. You could also make a case for Braden Holtby. I think he kept the Caps in the game most of these games. Can't really argue that. So you guys out there who still think it's the goalie, I'm sorry, but give up, please. But that's still as euphoric as today's win makes us, that still does not make the elephant in the room go away. And that 5,000-pound elephant is the fact that the Caps have been playing little better than 500 hockey for well over a month now, which is, if it gets worse or continues, puts them in danger of missing the playoffs. Now, we all know that that's not going to happen, but there's a lot of holes in their game right now that they need to fix. And there's a lot of things going wrong that can be adjusted. And so I wanted to get you, the fans, take on it as to what's been going wrong, what you've observed, and what you think basically would be the cure. So who better to kick that off for this week than our own consigliere? I'd like to bring him right now, and that, of course, is Mr. Christian Levesque. Christian, how are you doing this evening?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you guys doing? That's a good, huge win today, huh?
Heck yeah.
Awesome. So great. Oh, my God. Nothing better than seeing Crosby crying on the bench and breaking a stick and throwing a tantrum. Seriously, there is nothing better than that.
Nothing better to see a temper tantrum on the bench on national TV. Love it.
Exactly. Because right after I saw it, I thought, oh my God, here come the memes. Yes. Like, I'm just going to keep posting that. And between that and Dilly Dilly, God, number four, he's going to be fantastic to the Capitals in the future. So a little beat down on Malkin, who I hate more than anything. Awesome. I was happy with this game today.
Huge win. They needed it. They needed to get off the schneid today. After the lackluster performance in the last month, what were they in the last 25? 12-1, I think.
Something like that, yeah.
That sounds about right.
20 games out now from the end of the season. I think now is the time to put the pedal to the metal, so to speak. And tomorrow's the deadline, right? So we'll see what GMBM has up his sleeve. So I will be out and about at an event tomorrow with my cell phone on me. So I'll be that guy in the corner probably checking on the updates and being antisocial for a little while. So I'm not sure if I anticipate any big moves by the Capitals. I mean, there could be one, maybe two. A lot of folks have been grumbling about Ponick lately, possibly moving Jansen. I don't know. I know that we're up against a salary cap, and us picking up Dylan was really good, really huge move, and big props on San Jose and eating up half of his contract was, really helpful to us. But, we'll see what happens tomorrow.
So now that you brought that up, a two-part question here. Do you think that this team is in need of that one more trade? And if they are in need of it, what kind of a deal are you looking at? Maybe another forward, maybe another defenseman, maybe, you know, GMBM really rolls the dice and does something drastic or unthinkable. What are you thinking along those lines?
If he does roll the dice, this is one of those, you know, win now moments. I don't see us picking up another D. I think we're good at defense. We've got the depth. If anything should happen, we can sit back on Siegenthaler. I thought he's played pretty good this year. You got Juice and Hershey, who I thought played really well during the cup run. He had some bad luck last year with that injury, and he's doing superb in Hershey now. So if we can get some salary cap relief, and he had an awesome shootout goal last night, huh? And yeah. Then, you know, if we can get some salary cap relief and we're able to bring him up in case there's an injury or we need that depth in during the playoffs, but hopefully we don't see that because both teams in the minors have clinched playoff spots early this year. But I can see us – I can envision us going after another forward now. If GMBM were to possibly package somebody and a pick, I could see us getting another forward because it seems like lately there's no desire within the team and there's no effort. I'm not going to blame the coaching. I'm going to blame the coaching and the players, really. I think it's a mixture of both. I think maybe if there's a lull in there, and I was expecting this in December, but not here middle and towards the end of February when you should be putting everything together with 20 games to go to make that final push for the playoffs. But there's been a lack of desire, so maybe GMBM can put something together, shakes his team up, and they can get out of their doldrums and put something together. We got a home-and-home series against Winnipeg here soon, so that's going to be a tough one for us.
Right. So you mentioned kind of a lull or a maybe a lack of desire, and ultimately the blame in your eyes seems to go to both the players and the coaching. What would you say is the number one factor in why all of a sudden this team cannot do better than 500 hockey?
I think it's because there's a number of reasons. One, I think it's the Ovi chasing that 700 goal club, I think, was a huge distraction, in my opinion. And also, this team has the makings of making another Stanley Cup run on paper. And I think they know this as well, too. And I think sometimes they know that, you know, if we're behind by 40 minutes, we can turn it on the last period. It's not that way all the time. It's not like a light switch. These guys can turn it on all the time. We need to be able to put together a complete 60-minute game. Today was close, not close enough. I mean, there were some spurts here and there. Hit more of that playoff mentality today. But the Capitals need to show me more going forward with they could play a playoff-style game and putting together a good 60 minutes worth of play. But it seems like today the Capitals were able to – They were able to go to basics, you know. They're able to play a simple game, and that's what I think they need to do. Go back to the basics, throw the puck on net, play disciplined hockey, no stupid calls. I'm not going to talk about the Kempney there, Anna. But discipline. There's no discipline. Within the last 25 games, there was no discipline. And I know Reardon, before the game today, said that he's going to look further into what the Capitals disciplining wise. You know, if somebody makes a stupid play, a stupid call, they're going to get benched. Yeah, I want to see that. I want to see more of that. I want to see Reardon step up to the plate. You know, he was the coach in waiting a few years ago. You know, show me that. Bench a player. I don't care. You know, bench a player if he does something stupid, a stupid turnover in their own zone, a stupid selfish penalty late in the game. I want to see that, you know. There hasn't been that. I want to see these guys step up to the plate. I want to see Carlson, Backstrom, Ovi. Those guys need to step up more. That's leadership right there, but I haven't seen a lot of that lately. So now with the 700 goal out the way, maybe we'll see that going forward these last 20 games.
Sounds good to me. So not and not to open up another possible sore spot, because I don't want it, it is dead, but so I'm hesitant to bring it up again, but what the hell, for those out there who still insist, well, it's the goalies, they can't play right, they're the cause of all this. We know that the expansion draft is not till year after next, so it's not like we're going to lose Holtby that way. But there is a danger in losing him. And I don't think GMBM is going to do something that drastic as far as trading him just for some more salary cap relief.
No, that's not going to happen.
But given his play before and after, during all of this, I mean, what do you think is going to happen to him, at least for the rest of this season and beyond? Do you think he's going to wind up being the mentor to Samsonov more, or is he just, based on the last five or six games, now going to take the reins back a la last year?
Two scenarios. One, you know, we can go back earlier this season. I thought Holtby looked good, and then he hit his slump, and everybody was complaining. Everybody wanted Holtby out of town, and here's Sammy, and Sammy's been playing lights out. Well, you know what? Here comes the struggles. Both have looked, you know, pretty bad. But the last five, six games, Holtby has looked tremendous between the pipes. I thought he has really saved their bacon on a numerous occasions. Some of these games could have been 6-1, 7-1. But if it weren't for Holtby between the pipes, you know, thank God it was a lot closer than that. I think Holtby's done really well. Do I think he's probably played himself out of a huge contract? It's possible, but you know what, though? The Capitals need to concentrate now on making a run to the playoffs, so maybe he takes the reins and they can look at the Sammy situation later. Another possibility to look at is maybe he gives them a hometown discount, knowing that he played subpar. I don't want to say subpar. Maybe that's a harsh word, but a harsh term. But he didn't play, you know, like we thought Holtby would play early on, and maybe that took him out of a big contract. Maybe he stays for 1 year. They can give Sammy another year to mature between the pipes, you know. There were some things I saw the last couple of games with Sammy. He didn't look too well. So, I don't know. There's a couple of scenarios. I would like to see Holtby take the reins and make another strong run, in my opinion.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah, I think ultimately that's what's going to happen, because Brian Boucher, I think it was, during today's game on NBC, fancy that, somebody from NBC making an astute comment, said something that really hit the nail on the head, that Samsonov, while he's had great moments this season, while he's played, may not quite be ready for the intense scrutiny that comes with playoff hockey, that comes with being the guy, the right one and only guy, not a 1A, not the road goalie or the home goalie even, but being the guy. He may not quite be 100% ready for that. And so I agree with you there. I think that would be best case scenario if Holtby can hang on at least through, well, we know it's going to be the rest of this year, most likely, barring a, you know, something crazy happening tomorrow, and hopefully beyond that. But like you said, maybe a hometown discount deal, something like that. Hopefully something like that. But yeah, that would be the ideal if you know, the Caps can manage to keep him for however long beyond, and that would only benefit Samsonov, as we've mentioned so many times. So other than all that we've already talked about, has there been anything else that stuck out to you as to, well, not only why this team has not been playing well, but what they need to do going forward to not only, you know, maintain this, I don't want to say role because it's just one game, but like I said, I hope this is the turning point to keep this kind of, you know, momentum that they've got now going all the way into the playoffs. What do they need to do? What do they need to concentrate on?
Keep the fire. Keep that desire. Sounds like I'm quoting a song here. Go back to basics. Play simple hockey. I think if they can go back to playing simple hockey, limit the turnovers, throw the puck on net, they're going to be okay. Going back to basics, really, the defense has to tighten up. Try to get out of that system that they're in right now, because it is gosh awful right now. But I know a lot of people were talking about, you know, getting rid of Reardon. That's not going to happen. Possibility of, you know, people want Cashman out. That's not going to happen either. They just need to go back to basics, play a simple brand of hockey. Teams like, you know, we lost to Montreal. We've lost to New Jersey. Those are the teams at the bottom of the rung. We need to feast on these guys. We need to be winning against these guys like 6-1, 5-2. You know, I don't know why we tend to play down to our opponents like this, but I think they need to going forward, they need to find that fire again and go for it, because like it was during the 2018 season, I think it was 13-5 down a stretch. Now, if they can do that, go on a similar run towards the end of the year, at the end of the season, I think they're going to be okay.
Yeah, I think so too. Anna, did you have anything to add? Anything you wanted Christian to go over with us?
I do. I have one quick question.
Perfect.
regarding the fourth line that everyone has been praising, myself included, up until recently, where I can't figure out if the Dowd Hathaway Leipzig line is stronger than the Dowd Hathaway Boyd line. And I'm wondering if you, because honestly, the last couple of games with Leipzig in, I haven't been impressed.
No,
and I'm just wondering Leipzig, if what you feel.
I agree. Leipzig has been MIA for, I don't know, 45 days now. The first month of the season, that guy was all over the ice. Now is, I don't know where he's at. That could be one of the moves that the Capitals could possibly package. Tomorrow, somebody brought up a good point about Hathaway's time on the ice today and Leipzig's time. Leipzig's time was less than Hathaway's. So we'll see what happens. Especially with Ponick as well, too. I know he's got a big contract. I'd like to see us maybe shed some of that as well, too. But I haven't been impressed with Leipzig's play lately within the last 2 months or so. It's just non-existent. You know, I mean, the fourth line early in the season was on fire. It was our go-to line. You know,
now I'm like, do you think
created turnovers?
Yeah. And like, he was so fast, and he was so like exactly where he wanted to be, and was so just, I was like, yes, totally pulling for this kid. And then all of a sudden, I was like, I wonder if he hit his, you know, mental slump, because they're like, oh, here's Boyd. We're going to, you know, see how it goes with him. He's never been the same. And
yeah. No, he hasn't. Do you think that since we're up against the salary cap, that a lot of these players have become too comfortable? That's why?
Yeah, and honestly, at that point, I think then you've become too arrogant. Because here, it just shows, like, you are replaceable, unfortunately, so don't drop your guard. There was things in today, I think Leipzig only played, like, I want to say 6 minutes and 33 seconds, 6 minutes something. I was like, what the hell is he doing? Like, who are you passing to? And where are you trying to, you know, like it was just very impulsive playing. And I was totally loving the kid in the beginning. So I don't know what happened there, but I was like, between him and Ponick, I wouldn't be surprised if they're, you know, going elsewhere as in, 2:30 tomorrow?
It's a strong possibility. I know we had a good few seconds of pressure on the Penguins earlier today, and a lot of pressure in the offensive zone on Matt Murray. And that was that one play where Leipzig had his backhanded pass to nobody. And I think that hurt right there. And that could have been the possibility of
Coach Reardon
benching. I don't know. And that right there. I mean, that sealed the deal right there. So I don't know if GMBM wants to make a statement, he could be one of those players as well too. But yeah, the first month of the season, that kid was all over the place. Now it's non-existent to me.
Yeah, and it's a shame, because for the longest time, when Gil and I have talked about this, I've always said it's always, you know, one of the biggest things about this team is not just consistency, but chemistry. And that, you know, Hathaway, Dowd, Leipzig, I mean, that was, they were there, like they got it. But now I feel like it's 2-1, you know, like Leipzig's just, I don't know what happened, but he's just not, it's just not happening. And I will say, on a selfish, like, little rant, I had him, followed him on Instagram and Twitter, and, you know, would put my thoughts out there. And at one point, about, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, I wrote something about all of the players. I mean, like, all the ones who are on Twitter. And I was just like, you know what? You need to shut down that public mourning practice. Like, fuck all the people who are there with their posters and their, you know, signed jerseys and whatever else. Close it down. Back to the basics. You know, no more of this, and get your shit together. And everybody, all the other players, the Oshies, the Wilson, not that they saw it, but whatever. And I got blocked by Rensick.
Wow.
And I thought, wow, you know what, that kind of speaks volume, because I didn't single him out at all. If anything, I've been a huge supporter of his. And then I thought, God, maybe you just kind of are that, like, douchey player that is, you know, not a team player, you know? And there's always those kind of people that is like, that's not how the Caps are. Like, these guys are brothers and they've got each other. So maybe he was the kind of ooh in the chemistry there. I was like, how come he's not on the podcast?
Well, yeah, I and I
it's
think
not it, our it's, podcast that
right,
pathway
right.
down.
It's the, right, but the Between Blue Lines podcast.
Yes.
But it's very interesting that we got into a discussion about Leipzig, and I'll add this to that. And I'm pretty sure it was Bernie Diehl who posted it. But there was a comment made and on our page that basically said, well, Leipzig is doing what he always does, and he plays well for about the first 30 games of the season, and then he, you know, turns back into the AHL talent that he really is, and that's why he's a journeyman. That's why he doesn't last very long with one team, because he's not very, you know, not very skilled to begin with. And
wow, I didn't see that.
Yeah, I think it was on Sonia Kendall's page, the Washington Capitals fans page. Somebody was advocating for Leipzig to play, and I said, no, we'd like to let's have Boyd in there because he's got more skill, and right, that's what's needed a little bit more on the fourth line. And yeah, I'm with the both. I'm, you know, the both of you. I'm not really impressed with him. And if I'd have to look. I don't know what his contract is, but if he's an FA at the end of the year, you know, I'm not going to shed any tears if he walks, because I don't think he's really going to add anything to the team come playoff time. And I don't know. I'd really love to see Boyd get like a regular role,
yeah,
on that fourth line and show, oh, yeah, what definitely he can do. Get him more acclimated to playing regularly, and then, you know, he's ready to go for the playoffs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he showed up, and he's done what we expect Travis Boyd to do when, you know, he comes in after, you know, like maybe a 7-game or 7-day lapse between games. He comes in heading the game, you know, he's, yeah, where he needs to be. And I agree. Like, I just, you know, and I think that just rubs Leipzig the wrong way. And it's like, at that point, when you know that there is, you know, one position there and two of you guys are, you know, killing for it, it's like, all right, well, you have to give it your all. And what we're seeing from Leipzig, unfortunately, is the speed, but hey, you make it down the ice fast, but I don't know who you're passing to. I don't know what you're doing.
He's no Carl Hagelin for sure.
No, that skill isn't there. And so I was just, that was my question. I'm sorry that we got on a tangent, Gil, but yeah, I just wanted to know if Christian felt, you know, kind of the same way, like if Ponick and Leipzig went, I think I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, I think we're definitely all in agreement there. okay, so Chris, any final thoughts you want to put out there? Anything you want to plug even? Floor is definitely yours.
Don't lose faith in Holtby. This guy's got it. There's too many people out there that want Holtby out. I don't. I love the guy. I love what he brings to this team. Remember, he won us the Stanley Cup. Two, go back to basics. I think if this team goes back to basics, we're going to be okay. Three, keep in mind tomorrow at 2:30 is the deadline, the trade deadline. So who knows what GMBM has up his sleeves, especially with the team going 12-12-1. Hey, we're back in first place by 2 points, but it's a tight Metro division with the Flyers. They're creeping right behind us in the Carolina Hurricanes with that that emergency Zamboni backup goalie story. That was pretty amazing, huh? They are making a run at it as well, too. So it's a pretty tight race right now going down the stretch. So keep those things in mind. I think, like I said, if we go back to basics, we keep a tight ship defensively, stay out of the box, no stupid calls, no stupid turnovers. The 700 goal is behind us now, and I think they can concentrate on winning some games.
All sounds good as usual. And okay, so yep. So that again was Christian Levesque on with us. He is the show's official consigliere, and you just heard why. So he, of course, is one of the admins at the True Caps Fans admin room. And like he said, he will be on the phones come deadline hour. And if there's anything significant having to do with the Caps, any deals, any especially at the last minute, check out that page. Again, that's the True Caps Fans Facebook page. And I'm sure he and or Bernie and or Robbie, for that matter, will have something of the headlines there and an explanation as far as all the details go. All right. So as good stuff as always, Chris. Great having you on. Mom and Dad here need to have another discussion, as we always do. But really appreciate your taking time this Sunday to come on, and I hope to have you on again real, real soon.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate this. So let's see what happens tomorrow. Go Caps.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this sounds good. Caps. Thanks, Christian.
Thank you.
Cool. Thank you.
All right. Okay, so once again, that was Christian Levesque, and you can find him. He is one of the admins on the True Caps Fans Facebook page. So he's been a loyal listener for quite some time now, and as you heard, lot of astute opinions and observations on what the team needs to do going forward and why they may have been playing horribly. And he's just the first in a long line of guests next week. Slots are open. So if you're listening to this and you want to get in there and you want to, you know, give your opinion, give your observations, maybe you got a little bit different take, you know, as you're listening to this, hopefully this week, you know, give us a shout. Get a hold of Anna and or myself. DM us if you are already part of the room. And if you're not part of the Facebook room, you ought to be. It's Power Play Point Podcast Facebook room. Join us today and get involved. And it can be your voice that's on the show alongside ours. Okay. All right. So we've only got a little bit of time left, so I'm not going to drag this out. But so the debate has once again reared its ugly head. Ha ha.
Ha ha.
Is it the coaches or is it the players? And everybody knows by now which sides of the fence you and I are on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will concede this much. I don't think it's entirely the coaches as far as the last 20 games. Okay. I do think they have a part to play in this, though, as to what's gone wrong and as to what can go right.
Okay.
And I will open with this. And this is a quote from again Bernie Diehl, and this was from either True Caps Fans or our page. And I quote, Reardon would look a lot better if he had just followed what he said in media scrums following his hire and hired an NHL experienced assistant coach to run the D at the level he had them at when he ran the D. Even this past off season could have had either Phil Housley or Rob Zettler to replace Cashman, or right have he got right when he got hired, they could have taken a chance to see if they could have pried Gonchar from the Penguins before they made him a full assistant coach behind the bench, end quote. So he's saying maybe Reardon didn't put the right people in place, and I'm sorry, but I'm inclined to agree. I think a more experienced defensive coach is what's needed here, and there was that article, I'm pretty sure I mentioned it last week, but I'm going to mention it again. There was that article in Japer's Rink that when you look at the numbers, you know, especially the Caps defensive unit's, you know, propensity to give up high danger chances, ever since Cashman took over, it's pretty damning.
Okay, so my question is then, statistically, if you're looking at it and who we've lost as players, so you do have Brooks Orpik, who is huge. But to put it on Cashman to say that he's the reason why they're not doing so great, to me, is just not fair. It's not something I can wrap my head around. I don't know what he's like as a coach. I don't know what he's like behind the scenes. I don't know if he's a hothead or if, you know, the only time I ever see him is during, you know, like a little, 10-second interview, 10 minutes into the game. And that's about it. That's kind of like all I know about the guy. My whole thing is, if you are playing a position, this is your position, you should know exactly what you're doing. You cannot put it all on the coaches. No way. And that's my frustration. So are the numbers not as strong with Cashman in this position? Maybe not. A couple little changes here and there, but the players, you know, it happens. Like here we have Dylan coming from the Sharks. They put him on with Carlson. And that guy has been kicking ass and he's been doing awesome. And it's only been like 3 games. That to me proves my point. He knows exactly what he needs to do, exactly where he needs to be, regardless of whatever sweater he's wearing. And that's it. You can't put that on Cashman. You just can't.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up Brendan Dillon because So his first game against Montreal, pretty sure it was against Montreal.
Yes.
One of the first plays he had to face a 2-on-1. He was the one in the 2-on-1. Okay. Now, I've noticed that ever since the new coaching staff took over, a lot of the time, not all the time, but a lot of the time, the Caps D men have had this tendency to play the shot or to block the pass by falling down on their face and then getting in front of the puck.
Yes.
Brendan Dillon did not do that when he played this 2-on-1. He stood up, he stayed up, and he put his body in a position so that he could continuously cover both attackers.
Right.
Kept them both in front of them and thus negated the shot. Now, I mean, here's a guy who's coming in from a whole different system and knows that the chances are better if you stay on your feet and play the guys in front of you, then fall down and hope you try and get in the way of a pass. That, to me, is coaching and nothing but. Because it's coached behavior. It's learned behavior.
But I'm not seeing... I understand what you're saying because I've seen it. But I don't think it's so... constant. Like we've joked about... Jensen and whatever, but
Jensen at times could work at a mattress discounters.
Yeah, I mean, and that's just, you know,
I kid.
I know, but I don't know. But it's, but again, it's, you know, it's these guys know exactly what they're supposed to do. And there's times that we've seen, you know, Tommy go out and, you know, take a puck to the ribs and you're like, holy shit. All right. If, you know, to me, it's whatever is happening at that moment. If they feel like it's going to be beneficial, it's not like all of a sudden you turn around and like the two defensemen are like both on their stomachs. You know, I think that they just look at it like, hey, this is a excuse me, if you're in a situation where you can, you know, possibly block this, then yeah, go down and do what you need to do. I don't see it consistently. I think that, you know, we make fun of Jensen because he just seems to be in that situation all the time or that position all the time. But I think when you have someone like Dylan come in, it's like, God, you're putting him with Carlson. That you got a lot of faith in that. I think, you know, Reardon obviously has a say in that, but I think, you know, Cashman's got a say in it too, to be like, yeah, I think this is okay. Let's go. Let's just, you know, let's not start him at the bottom. Let's put him on the top. And he's proved himself. I think it's more, for me, it's more how the players react to each other and the amount of respect and the amount of, you know, chemistry and the amount of consistency and communication and all those things. That's what, you know, you're kind of looking at it like, hey, I'm going out in this battlefield. Do you have my back? Yep. And I've got yours too, regardless of the fact that I was just wearing a shark sweater last week. So that's my thing is like, that's where I think it comes so much more down to the players than the coaches.
Okay. Fair enough. But even so, I'm seeing a lot of bad habits and it's the coach's job to refine those bad habits, make those notes and work with the players to make them better. And
okay. Well,
and question. I don't go ahead.
Is are you seeing the bad habits consistently game after game?
Yes.
With whom?
With all of them, all six of them.
Yeah, I need on examples.
The ice. And it's okay. It's not just the face down, no, kiss the ice, hope you get in the way of a pass.
Right.
It's the letting the opposing forwards get behind them all the time. What are they doing playing so far up? That's not. Hey, I know what I'm doing here. That's the system saying, hey, you're supposed to be up here. At least
But shouldn't they know that though? I mean, come on.
They should know that. But if the coach is telling you, no, you need to play up here and join the rush. No, are you going to go against them?
No, but I honestly think there's so much more weight in hearing it from your teammates than there is from hearing it from a coach. Just to be honest, like there's going to be like, if you look at the game when we talked about last week, where the Capitals came out super sucked that first, I mean, it was atrocious 20 minutes and they went into the locker room and who was the person that came forward and, you know, said whatever was needed in whatever language and however tone was needed, Nicklas Backstrom. And that team came out and kicked ass and, you know, we won the game. Fantastic. That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about, is that there is something to be said about your, of course, you have respect for your coaches. Of course you do. And they're going to have insight because they're going to see things from a different angle. I appreciate that. I totally get it. Like, if I'm standing on the pool deck and I see that you're doing something with your stroke that looks like it's not so beneficial, my opinion should matter because I can see what you're doing and, you know, versus, you know, you can't see yourself in the water. but what I'm saying that I think the biggest motivation is doesn't have to come from the coaches. It has to come from their teammates. You know, like you need to have the Ovechkins and the Backstroms and the Kuzis and the Oshis rallying because they're on the ice together as a team. So you need to know what your position is, what you need to do, get your shit together because your teammates who are out there with you are either saving your ass or, you know, or they're there to celebrate with you because you scored.
Now, right. Okay. So I'll grant you some of that. And I look, most of this, my other point, goes to the fact that, from my observation anyway, part of their problem is they act like a team that's got too many Indians and not enough Chiefs on it. So you're saying that has to come from within. And yes, sometimes, especially in game, that's appropriate, but it also has to come from the top down. They have to get the direction from the coaching. Yes, of course, you know, you can suggest adjustments, pardon me, in the middle of a game, but in between, when you're learning how to make things better, it still has to come from the guy running the bench. And especially when you consider the fact that that person or persons is responsible for putting the right people out in certain situations. That's my take on it. And it just seems like at times they're directionless, they're leaderless, they don't know what they're doing, they don't know where they're supposed to be. And that, to me, it can't all be on the players. It has to come from above. It has to start from there. You know, that you can take the initiative all you want, but if it's wrong, then somebody has to correct it.
Right. I mean, I guess what I'll say, going back to what you and what Christian has said, that do we need to see Todd Reirden kind of put his foot down and bench players? Like, should Kempney have been benched today? I can argue that, because this is not something that we've seen all that often from him. Could Leipzig be benched? Yeah, because consistently in the last month or so, we haven't seen him play to the level that we saw in the beginning of the season. Like, I just think, for, you know, he's a, that is, to me, that's where the coach can come in. But what I'm saying right now, but to motivate the players to say, hey, listen, you know, we're in this slump and I don't know what's going on and whatever else. No, coach is out of the locker room. Those players talk to each other and say, listen, this is what's going on. This is what I'm, you know, I'm doing this and I feel like you're doing this. And it's like, they need to just get back on the same page, because the chemistry between the Capitals players and how much they think of each other as family is always apparent. And something just slipped. Something just kind of fell apart a little bit in the last, you know, however many games. And I think it more so has to come from the team, and doesn't have to come from Ovechkin. Because I agree, like, there was way too much 700 talk. I'm just saying that you have players that maybe haven't been doing this as long as others, and you've got vets, but you've got younger players that are determined to want to win, to know that the Capitals have won a cup, that want to do a repeat. And it's like, just listen to each other. And I just don't think it has to come from the coaching staff to get this team to turn around. I think it has to come within.
No. Okay. So I'll grant you that to an extent. That plus, unfortunately, you add to the fact that, look, and I'm sorry, he's not he who must be named. I'm going to say his name. Unlike his predecessor, Barry Trotz, I'm sorry, Todd Reirden is not anywhere near the master motivator that Barry Trotz was and is.
Yeah, but how many people were throwing Barry Trotz under the bus in the beginning of the 2017 season? I mean, there was a lot of people on that were just like, you know, he's got to go. We hit a slump. We didn't know what to do with the Holtby. We had Grubauer in. Things started to mesh. Things changed. And then all of a sudden, wham, you know, like, we're in the playoffs. We're kicking ass and whatever. Does it all come down to Barry Trotz? No. In my opinion, is he a part of it? Of course. But I still think like 80-90% of it is the players, and they've got their shit together, and they call each other out and say, this is what needs to be done.
But that
doesn't
happen.
And get back on the same page.
But that doesn't happen enough. And like you said, sometimes the coach has to step in and be that disciplinarian, call out players for not giving maximum effort, not doing the right thing, not thinking of the team first.
Right.
It has that part of it, maybe not the motivation, but that part of that other part of it, the accountability has to come from the coaching. It can't come from among a group of players who has a captain. Well, it can, but it doesn't mean as much.
Okay,
doesn't come from the guy making the decisions of who's on the ice, when, and for how long.
Okay, so let's take this last month. What if you were in Todd Reirden's position? Who would you have benched if you had an opportunity due to a lackluster effort?
Well, okay, so this last month, the Martin Fehervari experiment is a good example of that. I would not have done this musical chairs thing with sit Gudas out one game, then Siegenthaler, like they're still doing now for that matter. I would have taken one guy who might have benefited the most from sitting out and watching, and sit him down and say, look, you're going to be in the press box for a few games. We're going to put this kid in for you. I want you to sit and watch the game, watch the tendencies, watch how your teammates play on the back line. Tell me what you observe. Look out for these things and tell me later how much you think you can contribute to making things better. So maybe that person would have been a Gudas or a Jensen or maybe even Siegenthaler, or for crying out loud, maybe Dmitry Orlov even. It's not like, he's never made a mistake.
He's on my shit list, by the way, but yes.
Right, he perpetually.
Yes.
But like he's got, super glue on his pants or something, but
yes.
I digress. That kind of a thing is where the coach has to step in and say, look, I have to do what's best for the team to put them in a position to win. It's not that you suck. It is that you need to learn and watch and try to get better. That's the coach that puts the player in the position to do that. So by that standard, which makes a whole lot of sense to me, it is at least to a good extent on the coaches, not just the player.
Okay.
That's my argument. I don't think the coaches are doing enough to make the team better, make the units as, the defensive and forward units better as a whole, play better.
Well, but here's the thing. It's like, so you're given this roster and you're trying to look at who's strong together, which way they shoot, is it going to be two rookie players? Is it going to be a vet and a rookie? You've got all these things to think about and experience and all that kind of stuff. Well, you can't do anything unless you put the players in the game. And so I've said this from probably the first podcast we ever did together. I can't sit here and say that I need to give players a ton of chances because you know what? There's like 35,000 other players that want your position. So you need to go in there ready and prepared and give it 100%. So if it doesn't happen that, Gudas and Siegenthaler work out, but Siegenthaler and Kempe work out better, well, that's where the coaches are going to come in and say, I think that this is a good thing, or the players are going to give their input. But I don't know.
Okay. I'm seeing where this is going, and again, we're
circles.
We're like that. I think it's a Randy Newman song. We're going around in circles again, and there's going to be no end to this loop. Fortunately or unfortunately, my problem again is too many Indians, not enough Chiefs, and the coaching staff to me isn't this coaching staff in full is not acting like a coaching staff. There's not enough accountability, and that's why you have what you have. And if this team is going to go anywhere, that has to start happening. And I don't know. I just hope it's not too late. Now, my final argument, like you said, yes, there were people that were calling for Barry Trotz's head because they were in a similar situation and they did find their way out of it. But during that whole time, not once did I feel like they weren't doing all that they could to improve the team. I kind of feel like they're not doing, or they don't have any answers. And, you know, I agree with you in that, yes, they're working with, you know, different personnel. But I don't know. It seems to me like the coaches are going to just let the players work it out when they themselves should take a more active role. That's my whole argument. You're going to disagree with me, but that's the one, it's probably the one big problem I have with this coaching staff.
Okay. And I do disagree, and I'm not going to go in. It's not like a broken record.
I get that. And and at least we managed to not, you know, make each other cry this time. Right. So.
Yeah. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
We're all good.
Okay. So, all right. So, big surprise. We've run over on time again. So quick preview of coming attractions. Okay. So as we mentioned last week, there's the home and home against Winnipeg. So Tuesday night, 7 o'clock puck drop at Capital One. We host the Jets. Then we go up north to, over the border, 8 o'clock puck drop at MTS Center against said same Jets. And then it's a kind of a Midwestern brief road trip, because that Sunday evening, March the 1st, oh, thank goodness we go into March. goodbye, February. Goodbye, cold weather, I hope. But not for the Caps as they head into Minnesota and play the Wild. And then the schedule gets really cramped with some Metro Division foes, namely the Philadelphia Flyers, the Rangers, and the Pittsburgh Penguins, once again in a weekend matinee game. What the hell is with these weekend afternoon games with the Penguins?
Yeah, I'm over it.
I am so over it. Ugh. But anyway, that's what we're looking at the course of the next 2 weeks. And then, of course, the deadline will be long over with by then. We're going to devote next week's show to kind of a reevaluation of the Brendan Dillon deal, as well as possibly any other moves. I don't know who we're going to have on yet, but we like to have somebody on from our loyal listeners group to come on and give their take as to what's happening on the team. Anna, you've got Sports on the Hill, of course.
I do. It's
Where else can they find you, and what else will you be doing?
Yeah. Other than teaching. Yeah. Sports on the Hill tomorrow night, live True Radio Network and Facebook at 7 o'clock. We start talking about the Caps. I'm always on Instagram at Aquanox49. Contact me there, and also on Power Play Point Podcast Facebook page.
Yep, and that's where you can find the both of us and my contact information. I will put it out there once again. My personal email address, glhallowed@yahoo.com. I'm working on getting a group inbox together that Anna and I can both get to. Don't be shy, folks. So you got a question or criticism or a comment, anything you want, put it to us. You know, we're not afraid. Mainly the best way to get a hold of us is, outside of those contacts, is the Facebook page. If you're a member, you can DM either one of us for a question or comment, or just post it at the page. We would love to hear from you. And, we thank you for your involvement. Again, not sure who we're going to have on next week. We'll have one of you who is supposed to be, supposed to be wrapping this up. So with that, this is the Blue Liner on Point. signing off and reminding you that I haven't spoken to my wife in 7 years because, well, I don't want to interrupt her.
Oh, damn.
Hallelujah, and let's go Caps.
Go Caps.
This has been another episode of the Power Play Point Podcast. All episodes are available from Apple Podcasts, the Podbean app, blueliner77.podbean.com, and now available from Stitcher. Music by Joe McAllister, voiceover by Jeffrey Conkle.